मनोबुद्ध्यहंकारचिन्तानि नाहं न च श्रोत्रजिह्वेन च घ्राणनेत्रे न च व्योमभूमेन तेजो न वायु चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न च प्राणसंज्ञो न वै पञ्चवायु न वा सप्तधातुर्न वा पञ्चकोशा न वा पाणिपादं न चोपस्थपायु चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न मे द्वेषरागौ लोभमोहौ मदो नैव मे नैव मात्सर्यभाव न धर्मो न चार्थो न कामो न मोक्ष चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न पुण्यं न पापं न सौख्यं न दुःखम् न मन्त्रो न तीर्थं न वेदा न यज्ञा अहं भोजनं नैव भोज्यं न भोक्ता चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं अहं निर्विकल्पो निराकाररूपो विभूत्वाच्च सर्वत्र सर्वेन्द्रियाणां न चासङ्गतं नैव मुक्तेन मे चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप। शिवोहं 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 मनोबुद्ध्यहंकारचेतानि नाहं न च श्रोत्र जिह्वे न च घ्राणनेत्रे न च व्योम भूमि न तेजो न वायु चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं न च प्राण संज्ञो न वै पंचवायु न वा सप्तधातु न वा पंचकोशा न वा पाणिपादं न चोपस्थपायु चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं न मे द्वेष रागौ लोभ मोहौ मदो नैव मे नैव मात्सर्य भाव न धर्मो न चार्थो न कामो न मोक्ष चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं न पुण्यं न पापं न सौख्यं न दुःखं न मंत्रो न तीर्थं न वेदा न यज्ञा अहं भोजनं नैव भोज्यं न भोक्ता चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं अहं निर्विकल्पो निराकार रूपो विभूत्वाच्च सर्वत्र सर्वेन्द्रियाणां न चासंगतं नैव मुक्तेर्न मे चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं चिदानंद अहम् भोजनम् नैव भोज्यम् न भोक्ता चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहम् शिवोऽहम् चिदानन्दरूपा शिवो अहम् निर्विकल्पो निराकाररूपो विभूत्वाच्च सर्वत्र सर्वेन्द्रियाणां न चासं ಕೃತಂ ನೈವ ಮುಕ್ತೇನ ಮೇಯ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ 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 ಶಿವೋಹಂ
Namaste. Welcome. It's so lovely always to anticipate this moment when we come together in this virtual sangham and then to feel the moment when it actually happens. So I'd like to begin right here with the mantras, our early first meditations, and then go into the main part of the class. Tonight we are going to hopefully move through a sequence, a series of sutras, including sutras 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, and then 20, 21, 22. And some of them we'll talk about in detail. Some of them we'll kind of glance at. This part of the Shiva Sutras, as you've probably realized, I've said it before, and those of you who are actually working with the text and with the commentaries will have noticed it from your researches, that the Anava Upaya section of the text is not so much about how we experience ordinary life as embodied beings. It's about how the experience of Shiva Shakti, which are talked about directly in the first two sutras, the first two books, how they manifest in a human yogi. And, you know, again, as we saw last week, and as you, many of you are experiencing, the state that the Anava Upaya Sutras talk about is very out there. It's an extremely exalted state. And part of what I'd like to say at the beginning, and we'll talk about it throughout the class, is that when we look into an experience that is this high and this expanded and compare it to our own so-called normal experience of consciousness, we go, oh my God, this is way past my pay grade. I don't think I can ever experience it. And yet, the heart of the teaching of the non-dual tantra is that we have all this inside us. We have these superpowers, and they really are human powers that the siddhas, the enlightened beings, have realized through their practice, but which we have also. And part of what it is to part of the reason we study these texts is to allow the awareness of our actual genuine connection with the divine, our connection with spirit, to settle into us, to begin to make it not something that we read about in books, but that through meditation we can start to experience ourselves. I was recently reading the writings of a contemporary spiritual teacher whom I like, and one of the things that he reminded me of is the simple fact that if spirit, if God, if Shiva Shakti is real, then it's real everywhere. It's real in all places, in all times, in all beings, in all things. And that means that it's ever ready to reveal itself, including in those moments when the fire of purification is giving you experiences of suffering, experiences of contraction, and, you know, experiences of really not liking yourself. So, but spirit is there even when you don't like it, like yourself. And what I'd like to say to those of you who have been writing in quite beautiful sharings about your difficult moments, your contracted moments, what I'd like to say to you is that one of the mistaken beliefs that we grow up with, often most strongly if we've grown up in a religious tradition, because most of the Orthodox religious traditions pretty much tell you that you only please God if you're good. The tantric traditions, and actually all the non-dual traditions, want you to realize that your divinity, your identity as spirit, has nothing to do with your behavior in any given moment, with your success, with your good looks and your health and your age and your vibrancy and your good energy or your bad energy. Spirit is always there, and though there are times when we find it hard to accept this and find it hard to be satisfied with this, the truth is that spirit adores us. Spirit forgives us. Spirit holds us in compassion. And I honestly want to say this is something that I had to learn the hard way. So when I say it to you, I'm not saying it from the position of somebody who's got it all together. I'm saying it from the position of someone who has really had to work very strongly with these beliefs about who you have to be in order to be an enlightened being. So I want to say, right now, no matter what state you're in, not only are you already God, not only are you already Shiva Shakti, you are already a good person. No matter the fact that you might have lost it yesterday and that you might lose it again tomorrow, you're still a good person. And the way you can tell you're a good person, the way you can know you're a good person, is that when you get down to your essence, down to the nitty-gritty of yourself in meditation, that essence is made of love. And whether you're manifesting it in this moment or not, it's still the deepest truth of yourself. And what I have come to realize is that the thing that actually keeps us from fully manifesting our goodness is the belief that there's something wrong with us. That when we think or believe or feel that there's something flawed about us, we will tend to not only see ourselves through that prism, but behave in ways that reinforce our belief that there's something wrong with us. So the beginning of being present to our own true self is to remind ourselves that no matter how it feels at this given moment, you are goodness itself. You are love itself. And that is always true. So I'm saying this because part of what's been coming to me throughout the day-to-day is the recognition that of how profoundly important it is for us to know this, to accept this, to know this about ourselves, not as a way of, you know, patching over the holes we experience in ourselves or the unhappiness that we experience from time to time, but as the absolute truth. So with that awareness, with that understanding, we're going to begin our practice for this evening. And we'll start with the Ganesh mantras, Om Ganganapataye Namaha, and the Vakratunda mantras, which invoke the presence of the great elephant-faced, full-bodied deity of protection and of surmounting obstacles. We'll then chant the Mahamrityunjaya mantras three times, the invocation to Shiva as Dakshinamurti, the Guru, and the invocation to the primordial goddess. Then we'll do our beginning meditation, and then we'll plunge into these really quite extraordinary sutras that we're unpacking tonight. And in the course of it, we'll be doing a lot of meditation, a lot of practice. So from time to time, I'm going to be asking you to wake up and listen, because some of these practices will tend to plunge you into meditative states. And several people shared with me that they went into a meditative state early in the class and didn't hear a word I said until the second time they listened to the class. So that's okay if that happens, because I agree that the Shakti is very strong in this class. And I think it's particularly strong when we talk about the Siddhas. It seems to bring their grace, their Shakti into the field. And I know myself, at the end of the class last week, I was so kind of blasted with Shakti that I actually went into my kitchen and ate cookies, because I've discovered over the years that when there's a lot of Shakti in my system, eating sweets, you know, kind of brings me down a bit. And at the same time, I want to say that if you can allow yourself to just go with it, to open into it, and if that means being in intense meditation for a few hours, if you can do that, it's great, because it will allow the Shakti that's being invoked here to flow into your system and begin to dislodge some of the vasanas, some of the samskaras, some of the tensions that all of us hold, and which are the real obstructions in our ability to know ourselves as what we are. So let's just begin by opening the body to the flow of prana shakti, feeling that your pores are taking in the prana from the atmosphere, as though the breath flows in and out through the pores, which actually it kind of does, because your skin is an organ of, your skin breathes, your skin is an organ of respiration. So you can sense the pores, if you like, as tiny openings, which they are, subtly drawing prana through every inch of the skin. And it's my experience that even more than the ordinary pathways of the nostrils and the Ida and Pingala nadis, which are the vehicles of regular breathing, that when you become aware of the breath flowing in through the pores of the skin, what flows in is not only air, it's not only oxygen, but it's the subtler breath, it's the prana that is within the air, within the oxygen, within the physical biochemical substances that we breathe. Prana is the source. Prana is the life force itself. And when our breath can take in prana, especially through the pores, we're enlivened in a way that even oxygen doesn't match. So settle yourself, and as you experience the prana flowing in through your pores, see if you can find a posture that's upright and comfortable. Feel yourself poised above the triangle made by the pubic bone and the two sits bones. Sense the crown of the head poised above that triangle at the base. Sense the body led by the area of the breastbone rising as the sits bones and buttocks sink. Feel the shoulder blades melting under the back. And sit with the flow of the breath for a moment or two. Perhaps you can feel the prana flowing as a light, almost imperceptible breeze that enters and gently opens your pores, connecting you to the atmosphere, dissolving the feeling of separation between yourself and the surrounding atmosphere. In this class, we're going to be tuning into the connectedness that is never absent, even in those moments when we feel alienated or separate. The truth is that we're always connected to the entire environment. And as we breathe in and out through the pores, there's a kind of natural release of the feeling of being confined to the inside of the body, and a kind of natural opening and relaxation into the atmosphere that surrounds us. So hopefully you have your chanting sheets. And we'll begin with the Ganesh mantras. Three times the Mula mantra, and then the Dhyanam Shloka Vakratunda Mahakaya, and then into the Mahamrityunjaya mantra. Om Ganganapataye Namaha. Om Ganganapataye Namaha. Om Ganganapataye Namaha. Vakratunda Mahakaya Koti Surya Samaprabha Nirvignam Kurume Deva Sarva Karyeshu Sarvada. And the Mahamrityunjaya mantra three times. Om Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukamiva Bandhanan Mrityor Mukshiyamamritat. Om Trayambakaya Jamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukamiva Bandhanan Mrityor Mukshiyamamritat. Om Trayambakaya Jamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukamiva Bandhanan Mrityor Mukshiyamamritat. Om. And the invocation to Shiva as Dakshinamurti, the Guru. And I want to read the English. I bow to the Guru of all the worlds, to the physician who cures all worldly ills, to the ocean of all wisdom, to Dakshinamurti Shiva, the Lord who initiates us into the highest wisdom. And as we chant, you might like to imagine that Shiva, in this grace-bestowing form, not necessarily as a form that you can see or imagine, but simply as a presence, sits over your head and is literally beaming grace into your body through the crown as we invoke his presence. Gurave sarvalokanam pisaje bhavaroginam nidhaye sarvavidyanam dakshinamurtaye namaha. And the invocation to the primordial goddess. And I always like to imagine her, Shakti, goddess, as the entire field of experience, as that presence which we are breathing as we draw in prana through the particle, through the pores of the skin. Because Shakti, the goddess, is she who has become everything, including our bodies, including our minds, including the sounds, including the chair we sit on. She has become everything within our experience. And as we chant, let's consider that we're invoking she who is ever present. Sarva mangala mangalye Shive sarvatra sadike Sharanye Trayambake Gauri Narayani Namostute. Om. Freshen your posture and open yourself to the felt sense of connection with all of us. All of us who are here in this moment, all of us who will be joining us tomorrow, all of us are here together in the etheric community that is the Sangham, created by our shared intention to open to the presence of Shiva Shakti and to the revelations that they want us to experience. So begin to imagine that as the breath flows into your body, it flows as a stream of sparkling blue light, scintillating radiance that flows from a region high above the crown, a region that some of you may experience as a shimmering field of light. Some of you may experience as a kind of mysterious presence. And as you inhale, feel that this light of absolute radiance flowing from the heart of the universe is pouring down through your crown, bathing your brain, flowing through the neck and shoulders, down your back, opening your heart, filling your heart. And as you inhale and exhale, you recognize that this light, this radiance, is forming a lake of pure scintillating consciousness, pure awareness, pure vibrancy. Vibrates, pulsates with depth and radiance, and which is the true expression of your heart. And for now, sense the breath flowing in, drawing that radiance into the heart, and sense the exhalation expanding your sense of the great lake within your heart, the great blue lake of consciousness. Now bring your awareness, your attention to the base of the spine, to the area just in front of the coccyx, the perineum. And this time, inhale with the feeling that the breath flows in down through the crown, all the way through the center of the body, down to the base, and flows past the base of the body, past the coccyx, into the earth, and then with the exhalation, feel a deep scarlet-colored radiance rising up from the center of the earth, up through the body, flowing into the blue lake at the heart. So you're inhaling this deep blue radiance from above the crown into the heart. And then as you exhale, you sense that the exhalation draws up scarlet light from the center of the earth into the heart. As your awareness follows this pattern and centers itself in the heart, you feel yourself centered in the inner lake, the purple lake of radiance made of the joined blue radiance from above and the scarlet radiance from below. Maybe you see the lake, which is in your heart, but which is also a place in the center of the universe, the secret radiant lake that in Indian and Tibetan mythology is called Lake Manasarovar, the great mind lake, which has a physical presence in the Himalayan mountains in Tibet, but which is actually a subtle space of consciousness. And you recognize that around the lake, all of us are seated in our subtle forms around this blue lake. Perhaps we can be experienced as flames, each of us in our subtle radiant form is a flame, or perhaps we see each other as human forms, as subtle versions of our current human form. So we are both the individuals seated around the lake, gazing at the lake. We're also the lake itself. Just let yourself be present with this recognition. Now sense that your inner radiance produces a tiny thumb-sized flame and propels it through the air so that it is now floating on the lake. And each of us seated around the radiant purple lake of consciousness has placed our flame on the lake. And with great focus and great openness, allow yourself to be present with these flames floating on the great lake of consciousness, which is the source and center of all life. The lake Manasarovar, the subtle lake of consciousness, is both pure spirit, which of course cannot be confined to a mere body of water, but which is actually present everywhere. It's also the inner stream of Shiva's teaching, which intends to plunge us over and over again into the recognition of what we are, of what connects us, of how fully present this great radiance of consciousness is inside each of us and inside the community. You can open your eyes. Opening your eyes is not a requirement, but opening your eyes kind of helps to keep you in the waking state. Last week, we discussed a series of sutras about the experience of an awakened being, of an enlightened being, of one of those beings called a siddha, or perfected one. And before we move on, I just want to give you the culminating sutra in this sequence, Sutra 13, which defines an accomplished being in the tantric tradition as one who is completely identified with the radiant freedom of the divine. The Sanskrit goes Siddha Swatantra Bhavaha. Siddha, of course, means the accomplished one. Swatantra means freedom, but not any ordinary kind of freedom, absolute freedom. Swa means your own, and tantra in this case means efficacy, power. One who has swatantra means swatantriya, actually, is the noun form of it, is one who is radically free, supremely free. And of course, Swatantriya is the quality of Shiva Shakti. It's the quality of the absolute reality. The Tantras are very, very insistent on this, that you can't talk about what, for want of a better word, I'm going to call God, simply because when we say Shiva, we tend to think of, it tends to take us, if we're not Hindu, it tends to take us to remove us from the kind of awe of really understanding what this teaching is about. You know, this teaching wants you to recognize that you are the creative consciousness that has become everything, and that there are no ifs, ands, and buts about it, that you're being asked to own that, to recognize that, and of course to do the sadhana, the inner work that will allow you to accept that in an undiluted way. So Shiva Shakti's main quality, her core definitional characteristic, is absolute freedom of will, knowledge, and activity. And nothing can impede her will. Nothing is beyond her imagination. Nothing is beyond her. So, and the quality of a siddha, of an accomplished tantrika, is that he or she has a direct, ongoing experience of identity with that absolute freedom. My guru, when he had the meditation experience that he considered to be kind of the seal on his sadhana, that the experience was visionary. He was very intensely visionary, even though he had many, many immersions in that awareness that is beyond all forms and sights. But the teaching that he received from this vision was, he always said, the kind of the final teaching of the truth. And in this vision, he saw that his personal form, the form of his guru, and the form, the iconic form of Shiva, whom he had worshipped his whole life, he was a devotee of Shiva, that they merged into one radiant light and exploded as the universe. The whole universe dissolved into that, and he came out of it recognizing that God, Guru, and Self are not different, that there's just one consciousness in this universe, and that it manifests as any form that we might call God, as the teacher, whether the invisible teacher at the heart of the world, or the Sadguru, the teacher who had awakened him, and himself, are utterly and completely non-dual. So the experience of the Siddha is a firm realization of that, and that knowing that he or she is totally identified as the Swatantriya Shakti, the total freedom of will, knowledge, and action that flows through the world. And this is a very big deal. It's a very big claim, because what the text goes on to say is that a Siddha can bring about anything he or she intends. In Sutra 17, the Sanskrit is Swamatra Nirmanama Padyati. Everything that experiencing the objective world as a product of his subjective consciousness, such a being can create anything he desires. And this is not something that we're supposed to go, okay, that's a nice way of praising an enlightened being. We're supposed to take this as the actual felt experience of beings who have had that recognition, as it's my intention all of us will, now or in the future. So what this means, experiencing the objective world as the product of his own subjective consciousness, he can create anything he desires. What this sutra is pointing to is that the state of Shakti, the state of the Swatantriya Shakti, is one of absolute radical creativity, out of which she manifests worlds by condensing her own infinitely fluid consciousness into denser states that we call psychic contraction, meaning the normal human condition, you know, our psychological contraction, but also matter itself. So remember, the material world is contracted consciousness, contracted Shakti. So I'm talking about this not because you don't know it, I mean you know this teaching, but because I just find it very useful and in fact imperative to keep reminding myself of it. A person who really identifies with creative consciousness, with the Swatantriya Shakti, can quite easily create shifts in physical reality, since that consciousness is the source of the material world. And being prior to matter can play with matter. And you know, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, of course, gave us our first hit from the scientific point of view of what that means. You know, if you remember this very famous moment when a scientist first realized that physical reality can be altered by an observing mind, that when a physicist looked through a quantum microscope, it became apparent that the behavior of quantum particles changes when someone is looking at them. And this is not just a hint at the effect of mind over matter, but it opens the door to the recognition that the sages took for granted, that the ideas and intentions you hold in your mind can become physically manifest if you hold them with enough strength and enough real recognition of the power of your own consciousness. And, you know, obviously many of you have done so-called manifestation practice, or if you haven't done it on purpose, you've had experiences of how a closely and strongly held intention or desire can actually bring about changes in reality. And what I want to say is that the powers that the Shiva Sutras talk about are obviously of a much fuller expression than the powers that are talked about in The Secret or in the Law of Attraction or in, you know, the panoply of New Age books and teachings about how mind can transform your reality. But they're not different. They're really not different in essence, because, as I said earlier, we all have access to these superpowers, and we develop them in the course of our practice. So I used to know a man in Mumbai who swore that he had been with my guru's guru in the courtyard of his ashram when Nityananda, this being, suddenly looked up, raised his arm with the palm flat up as though he were pushing something above his head, and stood there for 5 minutes with his eyes closed, as though he were holding something up in the air. And the next day, a devotee came to the ashram to thank Nityananda for saving his life. And the story he told was that he had been on a plane that was trying to land at the Mumbai airport, and the plane had suddenly lost altitude, plunged 1,000 feet. He called out to Nityananda for help, and a minute after he did so, the plane leveled out and stabilized. And according to the story, Nityananda nodded and said, "I heard your call." So now we have no proof that Nityananda's intervention from thousands of feet below actually saved the plane. But this is an example of the kinds of stories that are told over and over again about these siddhas. Endless stories of miraculous interventions, cures, but especially stories of awakenings. Spiritual interventions that transform somebody's consciousness entirely. And I think many of us have had this experience in the presence of enlightened beings, that there's something about sitting with such a person that can just radically change the way you're seeing yourself and everything else. So the commentary on these verses says that all worlds, all individuals, all mantras, and all expressions of reality are under the control of a yogi who has become one with Shiva, who has become one with Goddess. And the core point that's being made in these verses is that we already have these powers. They're hardwired into us. This ability to know what has to be known, to be able to manifest what is intended, and to do whatever has to be done through the Shakti of our empowered will. And I would say that the way most of us, or many of us, have a glimpse of what's possible is in so-called states of flow, moments when we become so at one with an action that we're doing that everything seems to sort of magically happen without our own will, because our will is behind it. But it's that moment when your tennis game transcends thought and effort and the ball just goes right to the place you intended it. It's the moment when the solution to a mathematical problem just arises in your mind, or the right words flow out of your mouth or flow through your fingers through the keyboard without any sense of struggle or hesitation. And it's, you know, if you've had the experience of flow, you know that it's like your self-consciousness, your hesitation, your pride, all of these things that normally cause tension in your thought and action just dissolve. And that sense of flow, that sense of unconstrained thought and action is one of the most pleasurable experiences we can ever have. And it's also a glimpse of how life is supposed to be for us, what it's like to be totally open to the flow of Shakti with no barriers. And in Tantra, surrender, which is, of course, one of the major issues that we contemplate and attempt to make real for ourselves as spiritual practitioners, surrender is not becoming passive to the working of divine will. It's becoming so at one with divine will that there's literally no difference between your impulse and hers. So, you know, many years ago, I was in the ashram, I was in my lineage ashram in India, and the current head of the lineage, Gurmai, was in residence as well. And one afternoon, she came out of her house, out of her residence, and walking very fast, and began to walk at full speed up the hill to the garden, which was behind the main part of the ashram, to the cow shed. And when she arrived there, and there were a group of people with her, which is how I know the story, I wasn't present myself. When she arrived there, the bull had gotten out of his stall and was attempting to mount one of the cows, and it was causing complete chaos. Nobody knew what to do with it. She walked up to the bull, grabbed its halter, pulled the bull off the cow. The bull somehow surrendered to her tugging, and the cowboys led the bull back to his stall, and the people who were there said, "What happened? How did you know to do this?" And she said, "The Shakti just drew me." And this, to me, is what real tantric surrender is. It's being so transparent to the flow of Shakti that you just act without thinking, and you act skillfully. This is really significant. This doesn't apply to moments when you just bumble around and, you know, do something that is ultimately destructive, because the quality of acting in tune with the Shakti is that your actions are actually enhancing the flow of evolution. So Sutra 14, which is a very famous sutra, it says yata tatra tata anyatra, which means as here, so elsewhere. And the sutra has a number of interpretations, but what most of the commentaries that we're working with say is that the yogi who experiences this state of freedom, meaning this state of godness, because again, the use of the word freedom, freedom is used in the Shiva Sutras as a synonym for Shakti, as a synonym for the dynamic aspect of the divine. So a yogi experiences this state of freedom not only in meditation, but everywhere, as present everywhere, in all circumstances. In other words, this is a way of saying that one can experience divinity in every particle of the world. And this is, of course, the fundamental tantric realization that we're meant to be able to experience divine presence all around us with open eyes and maintain that awareness throughout our lives. This is tantric liberation. It's unlimited recognition of the vastness. And it's a recognition, it's an experience that you can have in meditation, with open eyes, through the actual breath, through the sensations of your body. And I want to do a practice with you, which some of you have done with me before, and which is a practice of actually tuning into the sensations that are rising and subsiding in your experience, and allowing these sensations to remind you that your actual felt experience, if you really feel into it, is of limitlessness. So you can close your eyes. We're going to start with closed eyes. And begin to allow the sensations in your body to come to your attention. And, you know, a sensation is entirely kinesthetic. It's, you know, sometimes we use the word felt sense. It's what you can feel through the inner sensation of touch. It's not a perception. You know, when you hear a sound, that's a perception. But a sensation is an experience of feeling, you know, that is physical feeling, kinesthetic feeling. So, for instance, itching is a sensation. A headache, a dry throat, a sense of ease in the muscles, these are all sensations. So we're going to practice with sensation without attaching meaning to the sensation. We're going to try and meditate on the actual felt sensations as I give you the pointing out instructions. So allowing your sensations, the sensations of the body, to come into your attention. See if you can feel the sensations of your hands against your thighs, or if your hands are not against your thighs, of your hands against the arms of your chair. How does it feel when you fully bring your awareness to the connection between your hand and the surface it's resting on? See if you can also feel the air against your face. See if you can feel the clothes against your skin. And bring your focus into one or several of these sensations, perhaps the sensations of the clothes against your whole body. Does the sensation of the clothes against your body have a border? When you really feel your way into that sensation, is there a place where it ends? Is there anything in the sensation that tells you, this is my clothes and this is my skin? And is there any information in the sensation that tells you, if you're not using your memory, your ideas, your understanding, is there any experience in the sensation that tells you that there's an edge, that there's a place where the body ends and the air begins? So if words are coming up like clothes, skin, face, legs, let those ideas go. And just focus on your current experience, whether of the face, of the hands, of the whole body as sensation, tingling, vibrating. Maybe there's a moment of a place that feels a little more intense. But does that feeling of tingling or a sensation of vibrancy or vibration or warmth. If you don't use words, does it have a beginning and an end? Does the weight or the pressure of your body against the chair really have weight, or is it just a sensation? Is there anything that would tell you that your body is sitting on a chair or on the floor? If you're not using your memory, if you're not categorizing your experience, is there anything in the realm of sensation that you're experiencing which is not you? Is there anything in the field of sensation that is being experienced that is not within your awareness? And as you begin to experience the breath, as we have been earlier in class, coming and going, through every part of the field of sensation that you're aware of. Let yourself relax into that field without using words like inside and outside. Just recognizing that from the point of view of sensation, there is no inside or outside. There are just the sensations that arise and present themselves . And that as you let yourself be more and more present to the sensations, can be recognized as actually floating in awareness. Sensation floats in an expansive field of subtle awareness. So as the breath flows into the body, the sensation is of being saturated, filled up with a subtle, loving suchness. And as the breath flows in what we would call an exhalation, that subtle flow pours into the field of awareness that is inside and outside. Recognize that the feeling of being you, of being yourself, is actually a kind of field of sensations nested in layers. And see if you can let go of the tendency to identify this as me and the tendency to identify what's apparently around your body as other. And just let the subtle flow of breath permeate, penetrate, the way air permeates a space inside and the space outside. So without necessarily opening your eyes, see if you can kind of bring your attention into a space where you can receive information, so to speak. And if you're already deep in meditation, that's okay. But what I hope many of you sensed in that meditation, which I also want to encourage you to practice in the week to come, is that to the degree that you could sense into the subtlety within sensation, you are actually sensing Shakti herself, the natural pulsation of Shakti. Which is, for many of us, most directly experienced through bodily sensation, as well as through the sensations that arise when we feel into the inner mind, into the citta, without categorizing our experience, without giving it names, but just letting ourselves feel it with our subtle ability to touch. And because this is a wordless experience, it can be difficult to describe. But in Sutras 15 and 16, the Shiva Sutras points out that the two most significant methods or ways in which, at whatever level of yoga we have approached, once we've done the practice of melting our identification with the body into the deeper state of awareness, which is, if you remember what we've been doing through the class in the Laya Bhavana meditations, once we've begun to sense that it's possible to melt the contraction of feeling limited by our physicality and our mentality, then the next two levels of practice, which are described in Sutras 15 and 16, are like this. Sutra 15 says that the realized yogi should never stop attending to the flow and expansion of Shakti, which is what we were just doing by meditating on sensation. The sutra says, bija vadanam, constant attention to the seed, the bij, which means seed. So the seed is the Shakti, which in our physical experience is our embodied experience, is the inner pulsation of the life force, which vibrates as the energy flow in the body. And one way that we experience this energy flow as the pulsations of Kundalini, which we might experience as an inner flow in the central channel, or as literally pulsations of energy in different parts of our body, or tingling or temperature changes, the many, many, let's call them symptoms of active Kundalini. But in Trika Yoga, the attention to Shakti is actually a matter of subtle attention to the felt sense of sensations that are present in our regular, ordinary experience. I call this attention to the breadcrumb trail of Shakti's awakening pulsation or vibration in your experience. So an example of this is the feeling of expanding spaciousness that can be present when you really pay attention to the breath. Often the sense of spaciousness is experienced on the exhalation, and we're going to go into that further. But it also manifests as the space, as the expansion that takes place in the space between breaths, the space between one breath and another. Or it means that as you watch thoughts rising and subsiding, you can begin to become aware of this subtle fact that your thoughts are actually rising out of the stuff of the citta and then merging back into the citta. And another way that we attend to the flow of the Shakti is that when we practice these meditations, including the very specific and technical Anava Upaya meditations that we have been doing, is that you're not doing them mechanically, but you're in a state of recognizing that in touching the space between the breaths, or feeling the flow of the mantra inside the central channel or the heart, that your intention and your attention is to the felt sense of Shakti, of energetic presence. So right now, just ask yourself, where do I feel the presence of Shakti in my body? Where do I have the most immediate sense of vibration in my body right now? Maybe there's a pulsation or throbbing in your heart. Maybe your attention is feeling pulled inside, and there's this deep movement towards meditation or sleep. Or maybe it's a growing sense of relaxation. Maybe your body is kind of settling into the seat. Or maybe the breath is rising to the crown, or rising and falling. Or maybe you are aware of awareness itself, present to the fact that whatever is going on in your body, or whatever you're experiencing as you listen to what I'm saying, that all of this is actually being held in the consciousness that is aware of your experience. So attention to the Shakti is attention to the ever-present vibration the energy that's constantly bringing the breath in and out, making thoughts arise. Attention to pure sensation without trying to describe it or make meaning out of it. Immersing your awareness fully in the present moment. Expanded states won't always be fully accessible. But when we have these pointers to, you know, actually tuning into the vibration of the subtle energy that's making your life happen, you can use these experiences as resting places, literally asanas. Asanas for the mind, which we touch into again and again, until it becomes second nature to ask yourself, okay, where is the Shakti present? Where can I feel it? How can I feel it right now? You know, for example, you can be simultaneously aware of contracted impulses, tensions, which also have their own Shakti, or painful thoughts. You can be aware of the energetic experience of painful thought. And by remembering to tune into the pulsation of Shakti in that tension or that painful thought, there will be a natural expansion, a resolution of that particular contraction, perhaps just slightly in that moment, but more and more available as you practice this. So the idea here is that you learn to take seat, to find an asana, a subtle asana where you can begin to take rest, and to allow that asana to become more and more subtle. And we're going to talk about this at a little length right now. And I'm just going to be quiet for a moment and allow you to tune into the sensation of the breath flowing in through the pores, flowing out through the pores. And perhaps to the expansion that may be beginning to make itself felt as you allow the energy of your inner body to accept the flow of prana through the pores, the sensation of energy coming in and flowing through the skin, as well as the nostrils. Perhaps for some of you, right through the crown of the head. Just be aware of the flow of prana through the breath. So this is another quite famous sutra, and it's often misinterpreted. The Sanskrit says, Astanastha Sukham Hrade Nimajati, which translates as, seated in the steady posture, the yogi effortlessly dives in the ocean of nectar. And if you're in deep meditation, I want to ask you to wake up, to pay attention. That's your wake-up bell. And kind of get this point. What the sutra means by asana is not your physical seat. As Lakshmanju explains in his commentary on the verse, as Kshemaraja explains, the tantric asana is not the physical asana. It's the posture of immersion in the very subtlest form of Shakti that you're able to access at this moment. And this is not to say that a steady physical posture is not important for all the reasons that we know. But the tantric asana is an inner asana, it's an inner posture. And, you know, in the non-dual Shaiva traditions, yoga is always internal. In other words, these tantric traditions are interested in yoga in its original meaning as the union of the individual soul and the supreme soul. So, you know, the Yoga Sutra, as you know, in the second sutra of the Patanjali's famous treatise, defines yoga as the stilling of the modifications, the movements, the vrittis of the mind. Yogas chitta vritti nirodaha, the disappearance, the nirodaha means disappearance of the movements of the mind. And, of course, what he's referring to is the very, very deep state of meditation known as nirvikalpa samadhi, the samadhi without waves, where the mind completely retires, becomes completely still. But in the tantras, stillness of mind is not the goal of practice. Instead, it's really the staging area for the expansion of consciousness. So, in other words, since we all understand that, you know, that when the mind is full of thoughts, the open spaciousness of consciousness can't really be experienced in its fullness. So it's necessary to encourage thinking to quiet down so that Shakti can easily expand back into her true state of all-pervasiveness so that the chitta can reveal its depth and subtlety. So, and this moment when the underlying awareness bliss, the true nature of your own mind begins to reveal itself, what this is called in the yogic text is the emergence of what's called the fourth state, the Turiya state. The Turiya state begins to emerge for most of us initially in meditation as the mind begins to turn within. It kind of dissolves itself into awareness, and this other state, this fourth state, that is, it's really a state of illumination, of full awareness that's different than the waking state, that's not a dreamy state, and that's not the darkness of deep sleep. It's the state of meditative awareness, of awake awareness. And it's not given a name because it's a wordless state. It's simply called the fourth. And, you know, if you've ever had this, a glimpse of this bliss saturated inner consciousness, this felt experience of Shakti, most of us have this experience in deep meditation, but not always. I must say that my early experiences of Turiya were open-eyed. They kind of arose. But what this sutra says, a yogi in a steady posture easily becomes immersed in the yoga in the ocean of nectar. They're talking about a yogi who's able to actually rest in Turiya. You know, at these moments, you know, when you have, and if you've had it even once in your life, you know what it feels like. Some of you are, you know, have this experience quite regularly in deep meditation or moments of, you know, the aha moments of self-recognition. For some of us, it's not a regular experience, but for all of us, when it happens, it's like, oh wow, this is how life should be. You know, this is how existence really is. This is what I am. This is how I want to be my whole life. Relaxed, aware, you know, filled with joy and aliveness. Turiya is a really, really great state. And when you experience it, it comes with the recognition that this is your natural state. Even if you lose it a minute later, you somehow recognize it. You know, what they always say when we have an experience of awakening, what people always say is, oh, this is so familiar. Even if I've never experienced it before, it's totally familiar. It's me. That's why they call it the self. And you know, this experience may come and go for a long time. In the Q&A on Sunday, someone described a very powerful awakening experience that she had in India when she was doing a practice with a Swami. And then, you know, she came home and it wasn't there anymore, and she felt extremely disappointed that she hadn't achieved the lasting experience of that state. But the fact is, this is how it is. It comes and goes. We move in and out of it. But what the tantras want us to do is cultivate this expanded state even when we come out of it. And the teaching in this sutra actually contains a pointer as to how to do it. So in other words, it's not a description of the experience. It's not just a description of the experience of a fully awakened yogi. It's also a pointing out instruction for ongoing practice. It's a kind of a command, a suggestion that we keep returning to our felt experience of awakened consciousness. And Kshema Raja, you know, makes it very clear that this, you know, that ultimately this is not a state that we, you know, that we do. It's a state that arises. But in the pointing out instructions of the non-dual traditions, there are wonderful passages which explain what it is to take your seat in the self. And the one I'm going to read to you is from the Netra Tantra, which is a text that Netra is the eye, and in this case it means Shiva's awakened third eye. So this is the third eye tantra, which describes the truth of awakened consciousness. And we're going to use these words to help trigger a sense of what it is to rest in the formless self. Now, I'd like you to listen, not with the intent to try and understand it, and especially not to try to make something happen, but instead to just let the words help you, help your mind to relax into what you're being shown here. And in this sense, see if you can let the words dissolve from another point of view your sense of being limited by your body or mind. This is what's sometimes called a non-practice practice, a practice of just being as you are, without trying to focus, to do anything, but just to open to the presence. So these are Shiva's words. And I'm giving them to you in Lakshman Ju's translation, which you can find if you are working with that book in the commentary on this sutra, and I'll send it to you also in the homework. You do not have to concentrate on a high practice or on a beginner's practice, on the space above the crown or the space below the body. You don't have to focus on the tip of the nose, on one of the chakras, on the flow of breath, or on the inner body, nor on the space around you. You don't have to close your eyes, nor do you have to keep your eyes wide open without blinking. You don't have to take any support for meditation, neither a deity, nor a mantra, nor a visual form, nor do you have to meditate on emptiness. You don't have to concentrate on the seats of the elements or on the sensations flowing in through the senses. Let all this go. And for a moment, enter into the universal being of your own existence, leaving aside all support. Let everything be just as it is. Recognize your essential nature as that which remains when all identification with anything dissolves, and rest as awareness itself. This sense of being, this sense of being that arises as you just let yourself be is Shiva. This sense of being, of just letting yourself be, is the state of Shiva, free of all forms and concepts. That experience, that sense of being, that simple sense of being, that simple sense of existence, which is filled with awareness, which is deeply familiar, which is the most intimate part of you, which is what we call the self. It's the default seat, it's the posture within which we take rest. And what the Shiva Sutras are saying is that we want to make this our default asana. So, you know, my guru used to teach meditate on the self. George Gurdjieff, the mysterious Russian teacher who had a big influence on so many Western spiritual practitioners in the early 20th century, had a phrase, remember this, remember yourself, which was his essential practice. And of course, Ramana's teaching was to directly be present to the self, and it's what's taught by many of the contemporary spiritual teachers. But the key to the practice is not to try to make the self an object, but to just rest in this sense of being. It literally means to take rest in your sense of being yourself and to allow the I sense to relax back into itself. And as you do this, you will begin to recognize, and I know that this is familiar to many of you, you will begin to recognize that this I sense, this sense of being, that is your deepest self, is also the deep self of everybody else. And apparently, according to all the sages, and according to the experience that we have in those moments when our consciousness opens and we realize what really is, and again, this is an experience I've had and that many of you have had, is that yourself is non-local. It is everywhere. And, you know, you begin by becoming aware of your awareness, separating awareness from the body, you know, realizing, okay, I'm not my arm. I'm the consciousness that is aware of my arm. I'm not my thoughts. I'm that which is aware of thoughts. But what you eventually come to realize is that the entire field of your experience is that beingness, is that being awareness, and that being awareness, when you're really in it, is deeply blissful, deeply and subtly pleasurable. So, when being present to being to awareness. Is what makes it possible for Turiya, the fourth state of consciousness. To emerge and become your felt experience in any given moment. So, once again, begin to sense the breath flowing in and out as though through the pores. In fact, sense the breath actually flowing in and out through the pores, because it does and it is. And let yourself focus on the exhalation and see if you can touch that place where the exhalation dissolves into the space. So allowing the breath to happen, to flow. Of course, it's coming in and out through the nostrils, but it's also flowing through the pores. And your focus is on the edge of the exhalation, the place where the breath dissolves into space. Just let your attention dissolve with the exhalation into the space that's present both within and without. The inhalation will come back on its own. You don't have to try to inhale or, for that matter, to exhale. Just be in that edge where the breath dissolves into space. This is, again, it's one of the doorways into the Turiya state. And this experience of being, which we are cultivating through this practice, according to the tantras, is actually experienced daily in a very natural way, not only in the space between the breaths, when we can be fully present to it, but also and always in this moment that we pass through every single day, just after we wake up from sleep, before our mind and identification with our so-called daily self comes online. You know, there's this moment when you first wake up, and I hope you can do this tomorrow. You've come into consciousness. You're no longer asleep. You're no longer dreaming. But just for a moment or two, you don't know, oh my gosh, my name is Jeannie, or I'm in my bed in New York. And sometimes if you've been very deeply asleep, you're not even sure where you are. You just know you exist. You just are. And then gradually you remember, you know, I'm Fred. I'm in my bed in Brooklyn. And oh my gosh, I have to get up because I have to get to the office. But in that moment between sleep and full immersion in your thinking, feeling, body, mind, self. You're just in being. And that is Turiya. That's your ordinary daily experience of Turiya. So there's no sense of being Sally or Vicky. There's just a feeling of natural aliveness and awakeness that is free from any particular self-definition. This is the asana in which the sages want us to be present. And this is what in Tantra is the true state of meditation. And it's a very natural space that is always present behind thoughts as awareness, as the feeling of being. When Turiya really comes forth, when it takes over consciousness, which, you know, for many of you it has done from time to time, it can, you know, it brings along with it the recognition that your ordinary personal self is not actually what you are and is not actually real. And there's resistance to that. Very often there'll be a resistance to fully expanding into that state. Or you might have a different reaction. The mind might take over and start explaining it. And that's one reason why the practice we do of recognizing thoughts, recognizing emotions, and identifying not with the emotions but with the underlying awareness that is conscious of them, it's why that experience is so important. Because you want to be able to gently stay poised in being as it emerges without trying to contract it or explain it. And this is a process. This is a practice. So, you know, it will happen in formal meditation long before we're able to experience it in the waking state. And it takes a while to cultivate. And I want to say that one of the reasons why it's important to sit for meditation, again, please wake up and pay attention to this. One of the reasons why it's so important to sit for meditation for a certain amount of time and stay in your seated posture as long as you planned to, in other words, to set a timer and stay seated even when you have an impulse to get up. Stay seated for the entire length of time, because your inner being will actually start to recognize that when you sit for meditation, it is being given an opportunity to emerge. And at least in my experience, that emergence takes a certain amount of time to unfold. I know that in my first 10 years of practice, it was necessary for me to sit for at least 45 minutes before that state of being would emerge. And I learned that if I got up before that, there would not be the full expansion of my consciousness the settling in of my consciousness into the meditative state. And that once that state had arisen, that it was important to sit for another 15 or 20 minutes or as long as I could in order for that state to expand. So, you know, nowadays it takes 10 or 15 minutes to, you know, to open into the state of being, which is one of the gifts of having practiced for a while. But the point is that for most of us, cultivating the Turiya state in meditation actually takes some time. It's why we need to sit. And it's also helpful to realize that real meditation is not just the fact of sitting, even though just sitting will have a lot of good effects, but it's the opening that occurs when the discursive mind begins to melt into its underlying energy, when thoughts begin to kind of dissolve into citta, and citta begins to melt into awareness, which is the subtlest form of your mind. So, as meditation, as the Turiya state, as the state of meditation emerges, you can begin to experience thinking as a phenomenon that is going on, that just goes on, you know, like just it's independent of you, it's not you, it's simply the natural effluvia of citta itself. It's the play of letters and words, the play of matrika, the which is the Sanskrit name for both for the sound forms that combine to form words and for the energies that constantly make words arise and subside in the mind. So the ability to actually sit quietly and be present with your own being while thoughts skitter around in your mind is one of the gifts of meditation. So we start by letting ourselves sit for long enough to begin to become familiar with the awareness and open spaciousness that are characteristic of the emerging Turiya state. And then the next stage is to begin to expand that meditation, expand that state into the moments after you arise from meditation, until eventually you're able to touch into it at different moments during the day. And in fact, one of the sharings that there have been a couple of posts which have shared this, people have shared this experience, where there's a sense of awakeness during dreams, a kind of lucid dreaming, where you're asleep, you're dreaming, and yet a part of you is awake. This is Turiya, that part of you that's awake during dreaming, that knows you're dreaming, and, you know, which also knows when you wake up that you've been dreaming. This is Turiya. This is the ever-present witness consciousness that starts to emerge as your meditation becomes more and more purposeful and more extended. It's often one of the reasons we do long meditation retreats, because when you're meditating over and over again for 5 days or 10 days, you know, meditation begins to infuse your entire body mind, and the Turiya state begins to, you begin to realize that you do have steady access to the posture, the asana that is called in the tradition Turiya. So in Sutras 20 and 21, the Shiva Sutras tells us what it really is, the secret of practical awakened living, which is to extend your relationship to Turiya beyond formal meditation so that it begins to become accessible in the waking state. So the Sutra 20 says, Trishu Chaturtham Taila Varasecham. The fourth state, the Turiya state, Chaturtham means fourth, must be expanded like oil so that it pervades the other three states, waking, dream, and deep sleep. You know, and you know, this is what you're experiencing when you have a lucid dream. You're actually experiencing the Turiya state, the fourth state, as being present while you're asleep. It's kind of a big deal, even though some people can do it naturally. So to be immersed in Turiya is to be able to stay in contact with the ever-present awareness to the point that you can regularly, during the day, pull back from the senses, pull back from the thinking, and experience yourself as the awareness, or as the love, or as the feeling of being. You know, Turiya may manifest as any one of these or as all of them together, which is the undercurrent of your life, the one who knows your thinking, the one who is present during both pleasure and discomfort, but is able with practice to stay steady during either of them, the one who is not excited when your mind and body are excited, and who's not disturbed when you're in pain. This is a big attainment, but it's utterly possible. And the way it can be felt and experienced is when you begin to realize that awareness is not an object you can meditate on, but that awareness is you. You know what? So again, this is something I'd like to ask you to pay attention to, this because it's one of the really crucial points about these practices, and of course it's very much part of the sage's understanding, that when we say be aware of awareness or meditate on the self, the natural tendency is to try to focus on it, to turn your attention back to itself and meditate on the part of your mind that is the knower. But as a couple of people have shared, when you're doing this in a deliberate way, it creates a sense of strain. Your mind has to strain to turn back on itself. It's like the eyes trying to look at the eyes. You can't really do it, but the eyeballs will attempt to turn back and look at themselves, and it's a contracting experience. But the fact is, when we try to know the knower in a deliberate, concentrative way, what we're actually doing is objectifying the self, which is never an object. So the art that we need to develop is to be aware of awareness without making awareness an object, just to recognize that you are the knowingness, the consciousness, the presence that's experiencing your life, and then to begin to expand that sense of experiencing presence beyond the boundaries of the body, and start to recognize that awareness is present everywhere. And this is something that occurs through your intention, through your subtle attention to your experience, especially in the moments just come as you come out of meditation. The moments when you come out of meditation are the moments when you can begin to subtly tune into the way in which awareness naturally extends beyond the body and beyond the constrictions of identity that you put on the mind. One of the very helpful practices for relaxing into your sense of the self is to start by bringing your attention to the back body. You know, our normal tendency when we're looking at something or listening to something is to literally let our consciousness leap out through the senses, especially the eyes. And this is what causes us to become uncentered, to leave ourselves, and to become entangled with other people and with situations in ways that, you know, that actually cause us to forget ourselves and cause us suffering. So the first step in taking your seat in the self is often just to remember to pull your attention backwards, to take seat, as it were, in the back area of the heart or the back area of the head or in the inner belly. It's very, very helpful in, you know, situations, social situations where you're feeling awkward, just to come back, just to bring your awareness back into, towards the back. And what you're actually doing, I believe, is kind of taking attention from the cortex, from the front part of the brain, back into the midbrain, and which is a place of much more natural relaxation. So one of the secrets of interiorizing your consciousness, whether you're a beginner or a very advanced practitioner, is to become familiar with the actual felt sense of what it feels like when your attention is at rest in the back of your body, in the back of your heart, in the back of your head, rather than rushing outward through your eyes or through your ears. And, you know, I'm going to ask you to do that now, to actually start with your eyes closed, but we're going to open our eyes in a minute. With your eyes closed, see if you can focus your awareness inside the body, in the back of the heart, or if you're focused now in the head, you can focus inside the back of the head. Literally taking seat in the back body or in the inside of the back of the belly. And now open your eyes and see if you can keep your attention inside and in the back body, even as you're looking into the space in front of you. This is a kind of asana of the gaze that, like the still posture of the body, creates a container that lets consciousness settle inward. So, as we come to the close of our session tonight, I want to offer you a practice that is actually a pointer from Sutra 22 of the Shiva Sutras. The sutra says in Sanskrit, prana samachare samadarshanan. And the translation, Lakshmanju's translation, goes like this. When the breath starts to slowly move out towards the external state, he also experiences the pervasion of God consciousness in the external world. So this is a description of the exalted state of a tantric realizer. When, you know, in this state where you're experiencing divinity within, and then you open your eyes, and as the prana moves outward, you experience that this same God consciousness is all around you. So let's assume right now that you found yourself in a meditative state. I think that most of us are in a fairly meditative state right now. And as you follow the breath or find your attention flowing in the central channel, or just let yourself be, have the recognition that your own consciousness, the subtlest part of your own consciousness, is Shiva Shakti. And for a moment, see if you can hold that conviction without doubt. just hold that recognition. And now, with the breath, inhale and exhale slowly and fully. Your eyes are still closed, but with the exhalation, have the sense that the prana, the vital force within the breath, expands and spreads through the field of your experience, through the room you're in, to the limit, to the edge of where of what you are presently aware of in your physical context. In other words, to the horizon, to the walls of the room, to wherever you see a physical limit. And focusing on the breath, on the exhalation, letting the inhalation come in as it will, but really following the exhalation, feel that your awareness spreads with the prana through the whole field of what you can be aware of in your immediate surroundings. You might have the feeling that the prana is Shakti itself, and that your exhalation is actually a subtle act of creating the world that you will experience through your senses when you open your eyes. And through the magic of slow, subtle, conscious exhalation, realize that you're creating a felt connection between the inside, meaning what's inside your body, and the outside, meaning the realm of consciousness that surrounds you and which in your ordinary state seems to be outside. And this is a practice that helps you start to recognize that the so-called outside world is not other than your inner experience. It creates an intimacy between inner and outer that you can recreate whenever you remember this long, slow, connected breath. So with great relaxation, your eyes are still closed. With the exhalation, you sense that the breath and the consciousness allied to the breath. Are flowing forward and backward and to all sides, expanding such that you begin to recognize that whatever exists within your field of experience exists within your consciousness, within the field that the prana touches. And now open your eyes. And breathe with the realization that your prana connects your inner experience of yourself with the air, with the walls of the room, with whatever can be seen or felt or heard. And name that. As Shakti, as pure presence, as spirit, as God, as yourself. you can keep your eyes open or close them. Let the prana carry your inner consciousness outward and touch whatever can be seen or heard or felt, infusing your inner awareness into the world that arises in your waking state. Although these great yogis come out in the waking, dreaming, and deep sleep state, says the great sage Utpaladeva, although these great yogis work and perform all actions, there is no limitation of inside and outside, of owning and disowning, of pure and impure, of good and bad. These limitations have ended for them. These yogis attain that supreme universal God consciousness. And just allowing the prana to flow intimately between inside and outside, with the recognition that whatever comes and goes in awareness is Shakti, is your act of opening to the recognition that is your birthright. And that the seer of the Shiva Sutras deeply intends for you to realize in this moment and certainly in this lifetime. So please sit with the expanding breath. Place your right hand over your heart and your left hand over the right. And bow to the Shakti who manifests as your body, your mind, and your breath, whose nature is consciousness and love. Have a beautiful week. Take care. So much love. Namaste.
Mano buddhya hankara chitani nahi nache shrotha jihve nache ग्राण नेत्रे न च व्योम भूमि न तेजो न वायु चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं न च प्राण संज्ञो न वै पंचवायु न वा सप्तधातु न वा पंचकोशा न वा पाणिपादं न चोपस्थपायु चिदानंद रूप शिवोहं शिवोहं ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ನ ಮೇ ದ್ವೇಷ ರಾಗೌ ನ ಮೇ ಲೋಭ ಮೋಹೌ ಮದೋ ನೈವ ಮೇ ನೈವ ಮಾತ್ಸಲ್ಯ ಭಾವ ನ ಧರ್ಮೋ ನ ಚಾರ್ಥೋ ನ ಕಾಮೋ ನ ಮೋಕ್ಷ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ನ ಪುಣ್ಯಂ ನ ಪಾಪಂ ನ ಸೌಖ್ಯಂ ನ ದುಃಖಂ ನ ಮಂತ್ರೋ ನ ತೀರ್ಥಂ ನ ವೇದ ನ ಯಜ್ಞ ಅಹಂ ಭೋಜನಂ ನೈವ ಭೋಜ್ಯಂ ನ ಭೋಕ್ತ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಅಹಂ ನಿರ್ವಿಕಲ್ಪೋ ನಿರಾಕಾರ ರೂಪೋ ವಿಭೂತ್ವಾಚ್ಚ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಸರ್ವೇಂದ್ರಿಯಾಣಾಂ ನ ಚಾಸಂಗತಂ ನೈವ ಮುಕ್ತೇನ ಮೇ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಶಿವೋಹಂ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪ ಶಿವೋಹಂ 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 ಶಿವೋಹಂ